The Shanshan woman who rode behind Egwene grabbed the Ammerlin's reins and yanked the horse to safety through the gateway. Sylviana followed, yelling, "Stand against those Sharans! Warn the male channelers of Demondred's attack on the Ammerlin's seat!" "No," Egwene said weakly, wavering in her saddle as the horses clopped into a large tent. Sylviana would have liked to take her farther away, but she had not known the area well enough for a long jump. "No, it's not." "What's wrong?" Sylviana asked, pulling up beside her and letting the gateway vanish. "Mother?"
"It's Gawain," she said, pale, trembling. "He's been hurt. Badly. He's dying, Sylviana."
Oh, light, Sylviana thought. Warders. She had feared something like this from the moment she'd seen that fool boy. "Where?" Sylviana asked.
"On the heights. I'm going to find him. I'll use gateways. Travel in his direction."
"Light, mother," Sylviana said. "Do you have any idea how dangerous that will be? Stay here and lead the White Tower. I will try to find him."
"You can't sense him."
"Pass his bond to me."
Egwene froze.
"You know it is the right thing to do," Sylviana said. "If he dies, it could destroy you. Let me have his bond. It will let me find him, and it will protect you, should he die."
Egwene was aghast.
How dare Sylviana even suggest this? But then she was a Red, and they concerned themselves little with warders. Sylviana did not know what she was asking.
"No," Egwene said.
"No, I won't even consider it. Besides, if he dies, that would only protect me by shifting the pain to you. I am not the Ammerlin." "No. If he dies, I will survive it and keep fighting. Jumping to him by gateway would be foolish, as you say, and I will not let you do it either. He's on the heights. We will force our way up there as ordered, and that way we can reach him. It is the best choice."
Sylviana hesitated, then nodded.
That would do. Together they returned to the western side of the heights, but Sylviana stewed.
Fool man.
If he died, Egwene would have a very difficult time continuing to fight. The Shadow didn't need to fell the Ammerlin herself to stop her. They just had to kill one idiot boy.
"What are those Sharans doing?" Elaine asked softly.
Birgitta steadied her horse, taking the looking glass from Elaine. She raised it, looking across the dry river toward the slope of the heights, where a large number of Sharan troops had gathered. She grunted.
"They're probably waiting for the trollocs to be filled with arrows."
"You don't sound very certain," Elaine said, retrieving the looking glass. She held the One Power but wasn't using it for now. Her army had been fighting here at the river for 2 hours. The trollocs had surged into the riverbed all up and down the Mora, but her troops were holding them off from stepping onto Shinaran soil. The bogs prevented the enemy from swinging around her left flank. Her right flank was more vulnerable and would need to be watched. It would be much worse if all the trollocs were pushing to cross the river, but Egwene's cavalry was hitting them from behind. That took some of the pressure off her army. Men held the trollocs back with pikes, and the small flow of water still trickling through the bed had turned completely red. Elaine sat resolute, watching and being seen by her troops. The finest of Andor bled and died, holding back the trollocs with difficulty. The Sharan army appeared to be readying a charge off the heights, but Elaine was unconvinced they would launch an attack just yet. The White Tower assault on the western side had to be a concern to them. Matt sending Egwene's army to attack from behind the heights was a stroke of genius.
"I'm not very certain of what I said," Birgitta said softly.
"Not at all.
Not about much anymore."
Elaine frowned. She'd thought the conversation over. What was Birgitta saying?
"What about your memories?"
The first thing I remember now is waking up to you and Nynaeve, Birgitta said softly. I can remember our conversations about being in the world of dreams, but I cannot remember the place itself. It's all slipped away from me, like water between my fingers. Oh, Birgitta, the woman shrugged. I can't miss what I don't remember. The pain in her voice belied the words. Gaido? Birgitta shook her head. Nothing. I feel that I'm supposed to know someone by that name, but I don't. She chuckled. Like I said, I don't know what I've lost, so it's all right. Are you lying? Bloody ashes, of course I am. It's like a hole inside of me, Elaine. A deep, gaping hole, bleeding out my life and memories. She looked away. Birgitta, I'm sorry. Birgitta turned her horse and moved off away, obviously not wanting to discuss the matter further. Her pain radiated its spikes in the back of Elaine's mind. What would it be like to lose so much? Birgitta didn't have a childhood, parents. Her entire life, all she remembered, usually spanned less than a year. Elaine started to go after her, but her guards moved aside to let Galad approach, attired in the armor, tabard, and cloak of the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light. Elaine tightened her lips. Galad?
Sister, Galad said. I assume that it would be completely futile to inform you how inappropriate it is for a woman in your condition to be on the battlefield.
If we lose this war, Galad, my children will be born into captivity to the Dark One if they are born at all. I think fighting is worth the risk.
So long as you refrain from holding the sword personally, Galad said, shading his eyes to inspect the battlefield.
The words implied that he was giving her permission, to lead her troops. Streaks of light shot from the heights, striking at the last dragons firing from the field just behind her troops. Such strength! Demondred had power that eclipsed Rand's. If he turns that power against my troops...
Why would Colthan bring me down here? Galad said softly. He wanted a dozen of my best men.
You're not asking me to guess the mind of Matrim Colthan, are you? Elaine asked. I'm convinced that Matt only acts simple so that people will let him get away with more.
Galad shook his head.
She could see a group of his men gathered nearby. They were pointing toward the Trollocs that were slowly making their way upriver on the Arafelin bank. Elaine realized her right flank was in jeopardy.
Send for 6 companies of crossbowmen, Elaine said to Birgitta. Gaibon needs to reinforce our troops upriver.
Light. This is starting to look bad. The White Tower was out there on the west slope of the heights where the channeling was most furious. She couldn't see much of it, but she could feel it. Smoke billowed over the top of the heights, lit by splashing explosions of lightning. Like a beast of storm and hunger stirring amid the blackness, its eyes flashing as it woke. Elaine was suddenly aware of the pervasive scent of smoke in the air, the cries of pain from men. Thunder from the sky trembles in the earth. The cold air resting upon a land that would not grow, the breaking weapons, grinding of pikes against shields, the end. It really had come, and she stood upon its precipice. A messenger galloped up, bearing an envelope. He gave the proper passcodes to Elaine's guard, dismounted, and was allowed to step up to her and Galad. He addressed Galad, handing the letter to him.
"From Lord Cawthon, sir. He said you'd be here."
Galad took the letter and, frowning, opened it. He slipped a sheet of paper from inside. Elaine waited patiently. Patiently, to a count of 3, then moved her horse up beside Galad's mount and craned her neck to read. Honestly, one would think he'd take concern for the comfort of a pregnant woman. The letter was written in Matt's hand. And, Elaine noticed with amusement, the handwriting was much neater and the spelling much better in this one than the one he'd sent her weeks ago. Apparently the pressure of battle made Matrim Coffin into a better clerk.
Galad! Not much time to be flowery. You're the only one I trust with this mission. You'll do what is right, even when nobody bloody wants you to. The Borderlanders might not have the stomach for this, but I'll bet I can trust a white cloak. Take this. Get a gateway from Elaine. Do what has to be done. Matt.
Galad frowned, then upended the envelope, dumping out something silvery. A medallion on a chain. A single Tarvalen mark slid out beside it. Elaine breathed out, then touched the medallion and channeled. She could not. This was one of the copies she'd made. One of those she'd given Matt. Melar had stolen another one. It protects the wearer against channeling, Elaine said. But why send it to you? Galad turned the sheet of paper over, apparently noticing something. Written on the back in a hastier scrawl was, P.S. In case you don't know what do what needs to be done means, it means that I want you to go bloody slaughter as many of those Sharan channelers as you can. I'll bet you a full Tarvalen mark, it's only been shaved on the sides a little, that you can't kill 20. M.C.
That's bloody devious, Elaine breathed out. Blood and bloody ashes it is.
Hardly fitting language for a monarch, Galad said, folding the message and placing it in the pocket of his cloak. He hesitated, then put the medallion around his neck.
I wonder if he knows what he is doing by giving one of the children an artifact that makes one immune to the touches of the Aes Sedai. The orders are good ones. I will see them carried out.
You can do it, then? Elaine asked. Kill women.
Perhaps once I would have hesitated, Galad said. But that would have been the wrong choice. Women are as fully capable of being evil as men. Why should one hesitate to kill one but not the other? The light does not judge one based on gender, but on the merits of the heart.
Interesting.
What is interesting? Galad asked.
You actually said something that doesn't make me want to strangle you. Perhaps there is hope for you someday, Galad Damodred.
He frowned. This is neither the place nor the time for levity, Elaine. You should see to Gareth Bryn. He appears agitated.
She turned, surprised to find the aging general speaking with her guards. General, she called to him.
Bryn looked up, then bowed formally from horseback.
Did my guard stop you? Elaine asked as he approached.
Had word of Bryn's compulsion spread?
No, Your Majesty, he said.
His horse was lathered. He'd been riding hard.
I did not wish to bother you personally.
Something is troubling you, Elaine said. Out with it.
Your brother, has he come this way?
Gawain? She asked, looking to Galad. I haven't seen him.
Nor I, Galad said. The Amelin was certain he'd be with your forces, Bryn said, shaking his head. He went to fight on the front lines. Perhaps he came in disguise.
Why would he? He was Gawain. He would want to fight. Yet sneaking to the front lines in disguise didn't seem like him. He might gather some men loyal to him and lead a few charges, but sneak? Gawain? It was difficult to imagine.
I will spread word, Elaine said as Galad bowed to her, then withdrew on his mission.
Perhaps one of my commanders has seen him.
Ah, Matt thought, face so close to the maps that it was nearly level with them.
Then he waved to the side, having Mika the Demani open a gateway. Mac could have traveled to the top of Dasha Nab to get an overview. However, the last time he had done so, enemy channelers had targeted him, shearing off part of the summit. And despite being so high, Dashar Nab did not allow him to see everything happening below the western side of Polov Heights. He scrambled over, hands on the lip of the gateway in the table, inspecting the landscape below. Elaine's line at the river was being pushed back. They had run archers to their right flank. Good. Blood and bloody ashes, those Trollocs had nearly the weight behind them of a cavalry push. He'd need to send word to Elaine to get her cavalry lined up behind the pikes. Like when I fought Sana Ashraf at the Falls of Pena, he thought. Heavy cavalry, horseback archers, heavy cavalry, horseback archers. One after another. Terrain Dahai Archin Diebsene. Matt could not remember being this engaged by a battle. The fight against the Shido had not been nearly so gripping, though Matt had not been leading that battle entirely. The fight against Elbar had not been this satisfying either. Of course, that had been on a much smaller scale. Demondred knew how to gamble. Matt could sense it through the movements of his troops. Matt was playing against one of the best who had ever lived, and the stake this time was not wealth. They diced for the lives of men, and the final prize was the world itself. Blood and bloody ashes, but that excited him. He did feel guilty about that, but it was exciting. "Lan is in position," Matt said, straightening up and returning to his maps, making notations. "Tell him to strike." The Trolloc army crossing the riverbed by the ruins needed to be crushed. He'd move the borderlanders around the heights to attack their vulnerable rear flanks, while Tam and his combined forces continued to pound them from the front. Tam had killed large numbers of them before and after the river had stopped. That Trolloc horde was close to being broken, and a coordinated action on two sides could do it. Tam's men would be tired. Could they hold long enough for Lan to arrive and hit the Trollocs from behind? Light Matt hoped they could. If they didn't... Someone darkened the doorway of the command position. A tall man with dark, curling hair, wearing the coat of an Ashaman. He had the expression of a man who had just drawn a losing hand. Light, a Trolloc would have found that stare unnerving. Min, who had been speaking with Tuon, choked off. Loghain seemed to have a special glare for her. Matt straightened, dusting off his hands. "I hope you didn't do anything too nasty to the guards, Loghain. The weaves of air will untie on their own in a minute or two," the man said, voice harsh. "I didn't think they were likely to allow me in." Matt glanced at Tuon. She had grown as stiff as a well-starched apron. Seanchan did not trust women who could channel, let alone someone like Loghain. "Loghain," Matt said, "I need you to fight alongside the White Tower army. Those Sharns are pounding them." Loghain locked eyes with Tuon. "Loghain," Matt said, "if you haven't noticed, we're fighting a bloody war here." "It is not my war." "This is our war," Matt snapped. "Every one of us." "I stood forth to fight," Loghain said. "And what was my reward? Ask the Red Aja. They will tell you the reward of a man abused of the pattern." He barked a laugh. "The pattern demanded a dragon, and so I came. Too soon. Just a little too soon." "Listen here," Matt said, stepping up to Loghain. "You're angry because you didn't get to be the dragon?"
"Nothing so petty," Loghain said. "I follow the Lord Dragon. Let him die. I wish no part of that feast. I and mine should be with him, not fighting here. This battle for the little lives of men is nothing compared to the battle happening at Sheol Ghul."
"And yet you know we need you here," Matt said. "You would already be gone otherwise." Loghain said nothing. "Go to Egwene," Matt said. "Take everyone you have and keep those Sharan channelers busy."
"What of Demandred?" Loghain said softly. "He cries out for the dragon. He has the power of a dozen men. None of us can face him."
"But you want to try, don't you?" Matt replied. "That's why you're really here right now. You want me to send you against Demandred."
Loghain hesitated, then nodded.
He cannot have the dragon reborn. He will have to take me instead. The dragon's replacement, if you will.
Blood and bloody ashes. They're all insane.
Unfortunately, what else was Mac going to do against one of the Forsaken? Right now, his battle plan revolved around keeping Demandred occupied, forcing the man to respond. If Demandred had to act as general, he couldn't do as much damage channeling. He would have to come up with something to deal with the Forsaken. He was working on that. He'd been working on it the whole bloody battle, and hadn't come up with anything. Mac glanced back through his gateway. Elaine was being pressed too hard. He had to do something. Send in the Seanchan? He had them positioned at the southern end of the field on the banks of the Aranin. They would be a wild card to Demandred, preventing him from committing all his troops in the battles being waged below the heights. In addition, he had plans for them. Important ones. Loghain didn't have much of a shot against Demandred, in Matt's estimation, but he'd have to deal with the man somehow. If Loghain wanted to try, then so be it. "You may fight him," Matt said. "Do it now, or wait until he's weakened a little. Light, I hope we can weaken him. Anyway, I leave it to you. Pick your time and attack." Loghain smiled, then made a gateway right in the middle of the room, and strode through, hand on his sword. He had enough pride to be the Dragon Reborn, that was for certain. Matt shook his head. What would he give to be done with all of these high heads? Matt might be one of them now, but that could be fixed. All he had to do was convince Tuon to forsake her throne and run off with him. That would not be easy, but bloody ashes, he was fighting the last battle. Compared to the challenge he now faced, Tuon seemed to be an easy knot to untie.
"Glory of men," Min whispered. "It's still to come."
"Someone go check on those guards," Matt said, returning to his maps. "Tuon, we may want to move you. This place has never been secure, and Loghain has just proven it."
"I can protect myself," she said haughtily.
"Too haughty." He raised an eyebrow at her, and she nodded.
"Really?" Matt thought. "This is what you want to fight about?"
He was not certain the spy would buy it. Too flimsy a reason. His plan with Tuon was to take a cue from what Rand had once done with Perrin. If Matt could fake a split between himself and the Seanchan, and in so doing make Tuon pull her forces back, perhaps the Shadow would ignore her. Matt needed an edge of some sort. Two guards came in. No, three. That one fellow was easy to miss. Matt shook his head at Tuon. They needed to find something more realistic to argue over, and glanced back at his maps. Something itched at him about the little guard. Looks more like a servant than a soldier, Matt thought. He forced himself to look up, though he really should not let himself become distracted by common servants. Yes, there the fellow was, standing beside Matt's table. Not worth paying attention to, even if he was pulling a knife out. A knife. Matt stumbled back as the gray man attacked. Matt yelled, reaching for one of his own knives, just as Mika screamed.
"Channeling! Nearby!"
Min threw herself at Fortuona as the wall of the command post went up in flame. Sharons in strange armor made of bands of metal painted gold ripped through the blazing opening. Channelers with tattooed faces accompanied them, the women in long, stiff black dresses, the men shirtless, trousers ragged. Min took this in just before she tipped Fortuona's throne over. Fire burned through the air above Min, singeing her ornate silks and consuming the wall behind them. Fortuona scrambled out of Min's grip, lying low, and Min blinked in surprise. The woman had left her bulky costume behind. It was made to break away, and underneath wore sleek, silken trousers and a tight shirt, both black. Tuon came up with a knife in her hand, growling softly in an almost feral way. Nearby, Matt fell backward to the ground, a knife-wielding man on top of him. Where had that man come from? She didn't remember him entering. Tuon ran for Matt as Sharon channelers began to pound the command post with fire. Min struggled to her feet in the awful clothing. She pulled a dagger out and huddled by the throne, putting her back into it as the ground heaved. She couldn't reach Fortuna, so she forced herself out the back wall, which was made of the paper-like stuff the Shanshan called tenmi. She coughed at the smoke, but now that she was outside, the air was clearer. None of the Sharans were here on this side of the building. They were all attacking from the other directions. She sprinted along the wall. Channelers were dangerous, but if she could put a knife in one, all of the one power in the world wouldn't matter. She peeked around the corner and was surprised by a man crouching there, a feral look in his eyes. He had an angular face. His blood-red neck tattoos looked like claws, cupping his light-skinned head and chin. He growled, and Min threw herself backward to the ground, ducking a ribbon of fire and throwing her knife. The man caught it in the air. He prowled forward in a crouch, bestial, smiling at her. Then he jerked suddenly and fell over, thrashing. A trickle of blood came from his lips. "That," a woman said nearby, a sound of utter distaste in her tone, "is something I'm not supposed to know how to do. But stopping someone's heart with the one power is quiet. It requires very little power, surprisingly, which is pertinent to me." "Swan," Min said, "you're not supposed to be here." "Lucky for you, I am," Swan said with a snort, inspecting the body, staying low. "Bah! Nasty business, that. But if you're going to eat a fish, you should be willing to gut it yourself." "What's wrong, girl? You're safe now. No need to look so pale."
"You're not supposed to be here," Min said.
"I told you. Stay near Gareth Bryn."
"I did stay near him, almost near as his own small clothes, I'll have you know. We saved one another's lives because of it, so I guess the viewing was right. Are they ever wrong?"
"No. I've told you that," Min whispered. "Never. Swan, I saw an aura around Bryn that meant you had to stay together or the two of you would die. It hangs above you right now. Whatever you think you did, the viewing has not been accomplished yet. It's still there."
Swan stood frozen for a moment. "Coffin is in danger."
"But I don't care, girl."
Nearby, the ground trembled with the force of the one power. The Damani were fighting back.
"If Coffin falls, this battle is lost. I don't care if we both die from this. We must help. Move."
Min nodded, then joined her as she moved around the side of the ragged building. The firefight outside was a raw mix of explosions, smoke, and flames. Members of the Death Watch Guard charged the Sharans, swords out, heedless of their companions being slaughtered around them. That, at least, was keeping the channelers busy. The command post burned with such heat that Min had to shy back, raising an arm. "Hold on," Swan said, then used the one power to draw a small column of water out of a nearby barrel, spraying them both. "I'll try to dampen the flames," she said, redirecting the small column of water to the command post. "All right, let's go." Min nodded, bursting through the flames, Swan joining her. The tenmi walls inside had all started aflame, burning away quickly. Fire dripped from the ceiling. "There," Min said, blinking away tears from the heat and the smoke. She pointed toward dark figures struggling near the center of the building and Matt's blazing map table. There seemed to be a group of three or four people fighting Matt. Light, they were all gray men, not just one of them. Tuon was down. Min ran past the corpse of a Suldam alongside several guards. Swan used the one power to haul one of the gray men away from Matt. Guards' corpses created shadows of firelight on the floor. One Damani still lived, huddled in a corner, looking terrified, her leash on the floor. Her Suldam lay a distance away, unmoving. Her grip had been knocked free, it appeared, and then she was killed as she tried to get back to her Damani.
"Do something!" Min shouted at the girl, grabbing her by the arm.
The Damani shook her head, crying.
"Burn you," Min said.
The ceiling of the structure groaned. Min ran for Matt.
one gray man, and then she was killed as she tried to get back to her Damani.
Do something! Min shouted at the girl, grabbing her by the arm.
The Damani shook her head, crying.
Burn you, Min said.
The ceiling of the structure groaned. Min ran for Matt. One gray man was dead, but there were two others, wearing the uniforms of Shanshan guards. Min had trouble seeing the living ones. They were inhumanly average in every way, utterly nondescript. Matt bellowed, knifing one of the men, but he didn't have his spear. Min didn't know where it was. Matt pushed forward, reckless, taking a gash along his side.
Why?
Tuan, Min realized, stumbling to a halt. One of the gray men knelt above her motionless form, raising a dagger, and Min threw. Matt toppled to the ground a few feet from Tuan. The final gray man had him by the legs. Min's knife spun through the air, reflecting flames, and took the gray man over Tuan in the chest. Min breathed out. Never in her life had she been so happy to see a knife fly true. Matt had cursed, turning about, booting his aggressor in the face. He followed that with a knife, then scrambled for Tuan, hauling her up onto his shoulder. Min met him.
Swan is here too. She...
Matt pointed. Swan lay on the floor of the building. Her eyes stared sightlessly, and all the images were gone from above her. Dead. Min froze, heart-wrenching.
Swan!
She moved toward the woman anyway, unable to believe she was dead, though her clothing burned from the explosion of fire that had taken her and about half of the wall nearby.
Out!
Matt said, coughing, cradling Tuan. He threw his shoulder against a wall that was only half burned, breaking out into the air. Min groaned, leaving Swan's corpse, blinking away tears both from grief and from the smoke. She coughed as she followed Matt out into open air. The outside smelled so sweet, so cold. Behind them, the building groaned, then collapsed. In moments, Min and Matt were surrounded by members of the Death Watch Guard. Not a one tried to take Tuan, who was still breathing, if shallowly, away from Matt. From the look in his eye, Min doubted they'd have been able to do so.
Farewell, Swan, Min thought, looking back as guards ushered her away from the fighting below Dashar Knob. May the Creator shelter your soul.
She would send word to others to protect Bryn, but she knew, deep down, it would be futile. He would have gone into a vengeful rage the moment Swan died, and discounting that, there was the viewing. She was never wrong. Sometimes Min hated her accuracy, but she was never wrong.
Strike at their weaves, Egwene yelled. I'll attack!
She didn't wait to see if she was obeyed. She struck, holding as much power as she could, drawing it through Vora's Sa'angreal and heaving three different bands of fire upslope at the entrenched Sharans. Around her, Bryn's well-trained troops struggled to maintain battle lines as they fought Sharan soldiers, working their way up the western side of the heights. The hillside was pocked with hundreds of furrows and holes, created by weaves from one side or the other. Egwene fought forward desperately. She could feel Gawain above, but she thought he was unconscious. His spark of life was so faint that she could barely sense his direction. Her only hope was to fight through the Sharans and reach him. The ground rumbled as she vaporized a Sharan woman above. Saeryn, Doasine, and other sisters concentrated on deflecting the enemy weaves, while Egwene focused on sending attacks. She stepped forward, one step after another.
I'm coming, Gawain, she thought, growing frantic. I'm coming!
We come to report, Wild.
Demandred ignored the messengers for the moment. He flew upon the wings of a falcon, inspecting the battle through the bird's eyes. Ravens were better, but each time he tried using one of those, one borderlander or another shot it down. Of all the customs to remember through the ages, why did it have to be that one? No matter. A falcon would work, even if the bird did resist his control. He guided it about the battlefield, inspecting formations, deployments, advancements of troops. He did not have to rely upon the reports of others. It should have been an almost insurmountable advantage. Luce Theron could not use such an animal. This was a gift only the true power could grant. Demendred could channel only a thin trickle of the true power. Not enough for destructive weaves, but there were other ways to be dangerous. Unfortunately, Luce Theron had his own advantage. Gateways that looked down upon a battlefield? It was discomforting the things people of this time discovered, things that hadn't been known during the Age of Legends. Demendred opened his eyes and broke his bond to the falcon. His forces were advancing, but each step was a grueling ordeal. Tens of thousands of Trollocs had been slain. He had to be careful. Their numbers were not limitless. He was currently on the eastern side of the heights, looking down at the river below and northeast of the place where Luce Theron's assassin had tried to kill him. Here, Demendred was nearly opposite the hill that Mogadin said they called Dashar Nob. The rock formation rose high in the air. Its base was a fine position for a command post, sheltered from attacks by the One Power. It was so tempting to strike there himself, to travel to it and lay waste. But was that what Luce Theron wanted? Demendred would fight the man. He would. However, traveling into the enemy's stronghold and possibly a trap, surrounded as it was by those high rock walls, better to draw Luce Theron to him. Demendred dominated this battlefield. He could choose where this confrontation would occur. The riverbed had been slowed to a muddy trickle below, and Demendred's Trollocs fought to seize the southern bank. The defenders held for now, but he would have them soon. Far upriver, Mihail had done his work well in diverting that water, though he had reported unusual resistance. Townspeople and a small unit of soldiers? An oddity that Demendred had not yet deciphered. He had almost wished for failure from Mihail. Though Demendred himself had been the one to recruit the man, he had not expected Mihail to rise to the rank of Chosen so quickly. Demendred turned to the side. Before him bowed three women in black with white ribbons. Next to them, Shendla. Shendla. He had thought himself long past caring for a woman again. How could affection thrive beside the burning passion that was his hatred for Luce Theron? And yet, Shendla. Devious, capable, powerful. Almost it was enough to change his heart. "What is your report?" he asked the three bowing women in black.
"The hunt was a failure,"
Galbraith said, her head low.
"He escaped?"
"Yes, Wild. I have failed you."
He heard the pain in the woman's voice. She was the leader of the female Ayad.
"You are not meant to kill him," Demendred said. "He is a foe beyond your skill. You have disrupted his command post."
"Yes," Galbraith said. "We killed half a dozen of his channelers, set the building aflame and destroyed his maps."
"Did he channel? Did he reveal himself?"
She hesitated, then shook her head. So he could not know for certain yet if this Cawthon was Luce Theron in disguise. Demendred suspected he was, but there were reports from Shale Ghul that Luce Theron had been seen there, on the slopes of the mountain. He had proven devious in the last battle before, jumping between battlefields, showing himself here and there. The more Demendred maneuvered against the enemy general, the more he believed that Luce Theron was here. It would be very like Luce Theron to send a decoy north while coming to fight this battle himself. Luce Theron had difficulty letting others fight for him. He always wanted to be doing everything himself, leading every battle, every charge, if he could. Yes, how else could Demendred explain the skill of the enemy general? Only a man with the experience of an ancient was so masterly at the dance of battlefields. At their core, many battle tactics were simple. Avoid being flanked, meet heavy force with pikes, infantry with a well-trained line, channelers with other channelers. And yet the finesse of it, the little details, these took centuries to master. No man from this age had lived long enough to learn the details with such care. During the War of Power, the only thing that Demandred had ever done better than his friend was as a battle general. It stung to admit that, but he would no longer hide from that truth. Luce Theron had been stronger in the One Power. Luce Theron had been better at capturing the hearts of men. Luce Theron had taken Illyana. But Demandred... Demandred had been better at war. Luce Theron had never been able to correctly balance caution and boldness. The man would hold back and deliberate, worrying over his decisions, until boiling forward in a reckless military action. If this Cawthon was Luce Theron, the man had grown better at that. The enemy general knew when to flip the coin and let fate rule, but did not let too much ride on each result. He would have made an excellent card player. Demandred would still defeat him, of course. The battle would merely be more... interesting. He rested his hand on his sword, considering his scan of the battlefield moments before. His Trollocs continued their attack at the riverbed, and Luce Theron had formed his pikemen, opposite them, into disciplined square formations, a defensive move. Behind Demandred, the shaking booms of channelers marked the greater war, that between his Sharan Ayad and the Aes Sedai. He held the advantage there. His Ayad were far better at war than the Aes Sedai. When would Cawthon commit those to Mani? Mogadine had reported some dissension between them and the Aes Sedai. Could Demandred widen the fracture there somehow? He gave orders, and the three Ayad nearby retreated. Shendla remained, waiting his permission to leave. He had her scouting the area nearby and watching for more assassins. "Are you worried?" he asked her. "You know now for which side we fight. So far as I know, you have not given yourself to the Shadow."
"I have given myself to you, Wild."
"And for me you fight beside Trollocs? Half-men? Creatures from Nightmare?"
"You said some would call your actions evil," she said, "but I do not see them as such. Our path is clear. Once you are victorious, you will remake the world, and our people will be preserved."
She took his hand, and something stirred within him. It was quickly smothered by his hatred. "I would cast it all away," he said, looking into her eyes. "Everything for a chance at Luce Theron."
"You have promised to try," she said. "That will be enough. And if you destroy him, you will destroy one world and preserve another. I will follow you. We will follow you."
Her voice seemed to imply that perhaps, once Luce Theron was dead, Demandred would be able to become his own man again. He was not certain. Rule only interested him insofar as he could use it against his ancient enemy. The Sharans, devoted and faithful, were just a tool. But within him there was something that wished it was not so. That was new. Yes, it was. The air nearby warped, bending. No weaves were visible. This was a rippling of the fabric of the pattern, traveling by the true power. Mihail had arrived. Demandred turned, and Shendla released his arm, but did not leave his side. Mihail had been given access to the Great Lord's essence. That did not make Demandred jealous. Mihail was another tool. Still, it made him wonder... was anyone denied the true power these days? "You are going to lose the battle near the ruins, Demandred," Mihail said with an arrogant smile. "Your Trollocs there will be crushed. You had the enemy vastly outnumbered, and yet they still will defeat you.
I thought you were supposed to be our greatest general, yet you lose to this rabble? I'm disappointed.
Demandred raised his hand casually, two fingers up. Mihail jerked as two dozen nearby Sharan channelers slammed shields between him and the One Power. They wrapped him in the air, jerking him backward. He fought back, the air-warping aura of the True Power surrounding him. But Demandred was faster. He wove a True Power shield, building it from burning threads of spirit. The threads trembled in the air, each one barbed with twisting strands of energy so small the ends vanished into nothing. The True Power was so volatile, so dangerous. A shield crafted from it had a strange effect, drinking in the power of another trying to channel it. Demandred's shield stole Mihail's power and used the man like a conduit. Demandred gathered the True Power and wove it into a crackling ball of force above his hand. Only Mihail would be able to see it, and the man's proud eyes opened wide as Demandred drained him. It was not unlike a circle. The pulling of energy made Mihail tremble, sweat, as he was held up by the weaves of Demandred's Ayyad. This flow could burn Mihail out if unchecked, could flay his soul with the rushing of the True Power, like a river surging beyond its banks. The twisting mass of threads in Demandred's hands pulsed and crackled, warping the air, beginning to unravel the pattern. Tiny spiderweb cracks spread out on the ground from him, cracks into nothingness. He walked up to Mihail. The man began to have a seizure, froth dripping from his lips.
"You will listen to me, Mihail," Demandred said softly. "I am not as the other chosen. I do not care one whit for your political games. I don't care which of you the Great Lord favors, which of you Moradin pats on the head. I care only for Luz Theron. This is my fight. You are mine. I brought you to the Shadow and I can destroy you. If you interfere with what I do here, I will snuff you out like a candle. I realize you think yourself strong with your stolen dreadlords and untrained channelers. You are a child, an infant. Take your men, create what chaos you wish, but stay out of my way, and stay away from my prize. The enemy general is mine."
Mihail's eyes, though his body betrayed him with trembles, were full of hatred, not fear.
"Yes, this one always had shown promise."
Demandred turned his hand and launched a stream of balefire with the gathered True Power. The white-hot line of liquid destruction burned through the armies at the river below, vaporizing each man or woman it touched. Their forms became points of light, then dust, hundreds of them vanishing. He left a long line of burned ground, like a furrow cut by an enormous cleaver.
"Release him,"
Demandred said, allowing the True Power shield to unravel. Mihail stumbled back, keeping his feet, sweat dripping from his face. He gasped, hand raised to his chest.
"Stay alive through this battle," Demandred said to him, turning away and beginning a weave to summon his falcon back. "If you do so, perhaps I will show you how to do as I just did. You may think you wish to kill me now, but know that the Great Lord watches. Beyond that, consider this. You may have 100 pet Ashaman. I have over 400 of my Ayyad. I am this world's savior."
When he looked back, Mihail was gone, having traveled away with the True Power. It was amazing that he could summon the strength after what Demandred had just done. He hoped he wouldn't have to kill the man. He should prove useful.
"I will win eventually."
Rand stood before the blowing winds, stood strong, though his eyes watered as he stared into the darkness. How long had he been in this place? 1,000 years? 10,000? For the moment, he concerned himself only with defiance. He would not bend before this wind. He could not give in for a fraction of a heartbeat.
The time has come, finally.
Time is nothing to you, Rand said. It was true, and it was not. Rand could see the threads swirling around him, forming the pattern. As it formed, he saw the battlefields below him. Those he loved, fighting for their lives. These were not possibilities. This was the truth. What was actually happening. The Dark One wrapped around the pattern, unable to take it and destroy it, but able to touch it. Tendrils of darkness, spines, touched the world at points all along its length. The Dark One lay like shadow upon the pattern. When the Dark One touched the pattern, time existed for him. And so, while time was nothing to the Dark One, he, or it, as the Dark One had no gender, could only work within its bounds. Like a sculptor who had marvelous visions and dreams, but was still bound by the reality of the materials he worked with. Rand stared at the pattern, resisting the Dark One's attack. He did not move or breathe. Breath wasn't needed here. People died below. Rand heard their screams. So many fell.
I will win eventually, adversary. Watch them scream. Watch them die. The dead are mine.
Lies, Rand said.
No. I will show you.
The Dark One spun possibility again, gathering up what could be, and thrust Rand into another vision. Julian Sandar was not a commander. He was a thief-catcher, not some nobleman. Certainly not a nobleman. He worked on his own. Except, apparently, when he ended up on a battlefield, put in charge of a squad of men because he had successfully captured dangerous men as a thief-catcher. The Sharans pressed against his men, aiming for the Aes Sedai. They fought on the western side of the heights, and his squad's job was to protect the Aes Sedai from Sharan infantry. Aes Sedai. How had he ever gotten tangled up with Aes Sedai? Him. A good Tyran.
Hold!
Julian yelled to his men.
Hold!
He yelled it for his own benefit, too. His squad held to their spears and pikes, forcing the Sharan infantry backward up the slope. He wasn't sure why he was here or why they were fighting in this sector. He just wanted to stay alive. The Sharans shouted and cursed in an unfamiliar tongue. They had a lot of those channelers, but the outfit he faced was made up of regular troops who used a variety of hand weapons, mostly swords and shields. Corpses littered the ground, and that made it difficult for both sides, as Julian and his men followed orders, pushing against the Sharan troops, while the Aes Sedai and enemy channelers traded weaves. Julian wielded a spear, a weapon he was only mildly familiar with. An armored Sharan squad forced its way between Mick and Charn's pikes. The officers wore breastplates, strangely wrapped in cloth of a variety of colors, while the common rank and file wore leather fitted with strips of metal. They all had their backs painted with strange patterns. The leader of the Sharan troop wielded a wicked mace, smashing one pikeman then the other. The man shouted at Julian, curses he didn't understand. Julian fainted, and the Sharan raised his shield, so Julian rammed his spear into the man's armor at the gap between breastplate and arm. Lighty didn't even flinch. He smashed his shield into Julian, forcing him back. The spear slipped from Julian's sweaty fingers. He cursed, reaching for his swordbreaker, a weapon he knew well. Mick and the others fought nearby, engaging the rest of this Sharan squad. Charn tried to help Julian, but the crazed Sharan brought his mace down on Charn's head, splitting it in two like a cracked walnut.
"Die, you bloody monster!"
Julian cried, leaping forward and ramming his swordbreaker into the man's neck just above the gorget. Other Sharans were moving quickly toward his position. Julian fell back as the man in front of him collapsed and died, just in time as a Sharan to his left tried to take his head off with a broad swing of his sword. The tip of the sword went by his ear, and Julian instinctively raised his own blade. His opponent's weapon broke in two, and he quickly dispatched the man with a backhand slice to the man's throat. Julin scrambled to pick up his spear. Fireballs fell nearby, attacks from the Aes Sedai behind and the Sharans on the heights ahead. Soil coated Julin's hair and stuck in clumps to the blood on his arms.
"Hold!"
Julin shouted to his men.
"Burn you, we need to hold!"
He attacked another Sharan who came at him. One of the pikemen raised his weapon in time to pin the man on the shoulder, and Julin speared him through his leather-clad chest. The air trembled. His ears rang faintly from all of the explosions. Julin pulled back, yelling orders to his men. He wasn't supposed to be here. He was supposed to be someplace warm, with Amathera, thinking about the next criminal he needed to catch. He figured that every man on the field felt they should be someplace else. The only thing to do was keep on fighting.
"You look good in black," Andral sent to Pavara as they moved through the enemy army on top of the heights. "That," she replied back, "is something one should never, never say to an Aes Sedai. Ever." His only response was a sense of nervousness through the bond. Pavara understood. They, wearing inverted weaves of the Mask of Mirrors, walked among Dark Friends, Shadow Spawn, and Sharans. And it was working. Pavara wore a white dress and a black cloak over it. Those weren't part of a weave. But anyone looking into her cloak's hood would see the face of Alviarin, a member of the Black Aja. Theodrin wore the face of Rihanna. Andral and Imaren wore weaves that gave them the faces of Nensen and Kash, two of Taim's cronies. Jonath looked very unlike himself, wearing the face of a nondescript Dark Friend, and he played the part well, skulking behind and carrying their gear. One would never have seen the good-natured Two Rivers man in that hawk-faced man with the greasy hair and nervous manner. They moved at a brisk pace along the back lines of the Shadows' army on the heights. Trollocs hauled bundles of arrows forward. Others left the lines to feast on piles of corpses. Cookpots boiled here. That shocked Pavara. They were stopping to eat? Now? "Only some of them," Andral sent. "It's common for human armies, too, though these moments don't make it into the ballads. The fighting has lasted all day, and soldiers need energy while fighting. Usually you rotate in three batches, your front lines, your reserves, and your off-duty. Troops who will trudge away from the fight and eat as quickly as they can before grabbing a little sleep, then back to the front lines." She'd once seen war differently. She'd imagined every man committed every moment of the day. A true battle, however, was not a sprint. It was an extended, soul-grinding trudge. It was late afternoon already, approaching evening. To the east, below the heights, battle lines extended far in both directions along the dry riverbed. Many thousands of men and Trollocs fought back and forth there. Large numbers of Trollocs fought there, but others were rotated back up the heights to either eat or collapse into unconsciousness for a time. She did not look too closely at the cookpots, though Jonath fell to his knees and sicked up beside the path. He had noticed the body parts floating in the thick stew. As he emptied his stomach onto the ground, a passing group of Trollocs snorted and hooted in mockery. "Why are they pushing off the heights to take the river?" she sent to Andral. "It seems to be a better position up here." "Maybe it is," Andral sent. "But the Shadow is the aggressor. If they stay in this position, it serves Cawthon's army. Demondred needs to keep pressing him. That means crossing the river." So Andral understood tactics, too. "Interesting." "I've picked up a few things," he sent. "I won't be leading a battle any time soon." "Just curious how many lives you've led, Andral." "An odd statement, coming from a woman who is old enough to be my grandmother's grandmother." They continued along the eastern side of the heights. Distant, on the far western side, the Aes Sedai were battling their way up to the top, but for now the heights were held by Demondred's forces. This area Pavara walked through was full of Trollocs. Some bowed in a lumbering way as Pavara and the others passed. Others curled up on the stones to sleep, with no cushions or blankets. Each one kept its weapon at hand. "This does not look promising," Imaran said softly from behind his mask. "I do not see Taim associating with Trollocs any more than he has to." "Ahead," Andral said. "Look there." The Trollocs were separated from a group of Sharans who could be seen up ahead, wearing unfamiliar uniforms. They wore armor that was wrapped in cloth, so none of the metal showed except on the very back, though the shape of the breastplates was still obvious. Pavara looked to the others. "I could see Taim being part of that group," Imaran said. "It's likely to smell far less putrid than over here among the Trollocs, for one thing." Pavara had been ignoring the stench. She'd learned to do that years ago, snuffing out powerful scents in the same way she ignored heat and cold. As Imaran said it, however, a hint of what the others were smelling seeped through her defenses. She quickly regained control. It was awful.
"Will the Sharans let us pass?" Jonath asked.
"We shall see," Pavara said, setting off toward the Sharans. Their group fell in around her. The Sharan guards maintained an uneasy line against the Trollocs, watching them as they would enemies. This alliance, or whatever it was, did not sit terribly well with the Sharan soldiers. They didn't try to mask their looks of disgust, and many had tied cloths around their faces to mask the odors. As Pavara passed their line, a nobleman, or such she assumed him to be from his armor of brazen rings, moved to confront her. A well-practiced Aes Sedai look staved him off.
"I am far too important for you to bother," that look said.
It worked beautifully, and they were in. The Sharan reserve camp was orderly as men rotated in from the west, where they fought the White Tower forces. The fierce channeling from that direction kept drawing Pavara's attention like a bright light.
"What do you think?" Andral sent to her.
"We're going to need to talk to someone. The battlefield is just too big for us to find Taim on our own." He sent back his agreement. Not for the first time, Pavara found their bond distracting. She not only had to deal with her own nervousness, but Andral's as well. That crept from the back of her mind, and she had to constrain it forcefully, using breathing exercises she'd learned when first in the tower. She stopped in the center of the camp, looking about, trying to decide whom to approach. She could distinguish servants from nobles. Approaching the former would be less dangerous, but also less likely to yield results. Maybe...
"You!"
Pavara started, spinning around.
"You should not be here."
The aged Sharan was completely bald, with a short gray beard. Twin sword hilts in the shape of serpent's heads peeked out over his shoulders. He wore the blades crossed at his back, and he carried a staff that had strange holes along its length. A flute of some sort?
"Come,"
the man said, his accent so thick Pavara could barely make it out.
"The Wild will need to see you."
"Who is the Wild?" Pavara sent Andral. He shook his head, feeling as baffled as she did. This could turn out very badly. The old man stopped ahead of them with an annoyed expression. What would he do if they refused? Pavara was tempted to create a gateway for them to flee.
"We follow," Andral thought, striding forward. "We're never going to find Taim in this unless we talk to someone."
Pavara frowned as he walked after the man, the other Ashaman joining him. She hurriedly caught up. "I thought we had decided I was in charge," she thought to him.
"No," he replied. "I thought that we'd decided you would act like you were in charge."
She sent back a calculated mix of cold displeasure and an implication that the conversation was not yet finished. Andral sent back amusement.
"Did you just glare at me, mentally?"
"That's impressive." "We're taking a risk," she sent back. This man could lead us into anything.
Yes, he replied.
Something smoldered inside of him. Something only hinted at until now. You want Taim that badly?
Yes, I do.
She nodded.
You understand, he said.
I lost friends to him as well, Andral, she replied. I watched them be taken right in front of me. We have to be careful, though. We can't take too many risks.
Not yet. It's the end of the world, Pavara, Andral sent back. If we can't take risks now, when will we?
She followed without further argument, wondering at the determined focus she sensed in Andral. Taim had awoken something inside of him by taking his friends and turning them to the shadow. As they followed the old Sharon, Pavara realized that she didn't understand what Andral was feeling. Not completely. Aes Sedai friends of hers had been taken, but it wasn't the same as Andral losing Evan. Evan had trusted Andral, looked to Andral for protection. The Aes Sedai with Pavara had been acquaintances, friends, but it was different. The old Sharon led them to a larger group of people, many of whom wore fine clothing. The highest noblemen and women among the Sharons didn't seem to fight, for not one of them carried a weapon. They made way for the older man, though several looked at his swords and sneered. Jonath and Imaran moved in around Pavara and Theodrin, one to each side, like bodyguards. They eyed the Sharons, hands on weapons, and she suspected that both were holding the One Power. Well, that would probably be expected of dreadlords who were walking among allies they didn't fully trust. They didn't need to protect Pavara in such a way, but it was a nice gesture. She had always thought it would be useful to have a warder. She had gone to the Black Tower with the intention of taking multiple Ashaman as warders. Perhaps... Andral immediately felt jealous. What are you? Some green with a flock of men fawning over her? She sent back amusement. Why not? They're too young for you, he sent back. Jonathan is